Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Dylan from Cloud Nothings.
Cleveland, solo project, signed a deal and then needed a band. Then you left Cleveland. You came back refreshed. And there you go. That's it. We're done. Oh, yeah. And you've had four albums and you've had different producers. See, we're done with the interview. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, because I've been thinking about this a lot because there was just the toy fair in Seattle a couple days ago. But I really like little toys. Yeah, big toy fan.
What if one of your other fake bands actually stuck? And if so, which of those fake bands might it have been? And then what would we be talking about today?
But the one that I did have that did almost kind of stick, actually, that I took more seriously than the other ones, was called Cat Killer.
Cat Killer.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. The MySpace page might still be up there. But I made like little CDRs and all that. And like I got some cassettes out actually on little labels. And that was kind of my thing for a minute. And then I made Cloud Nothings. And that was the one that people were like, oh, okay. Yeah. But Cat Killer would still be around. And I mean, it'd probably sound the same as Cloud Nothings. I don't think I was on any crazy path.
Okay. So it was really more of a name thing than a... So do you remember, did Cat Killer actually have an iconic song that maybe we would have heard today? Was there an iconic song, or was it really from the same group of what became Cloud Nothing songs?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of just like the first songs I ever wrote. So nothing was iconic, for sure. but we had, or I had, there's like two little CDs out there and some tapes, so... If anyone wants them, they can find them.
Why is Cleveland suddenly, why is this transition, why is Cleveland happier now?
It does feel happier now, because I did leave for a while and I came back and everything was just different. Yeah, but I want to go ahead and attribute some of it to sports. It's a very like sports happiness-based city.
Okay,
yeah, when teams are doing well, it seems like Cleveland's just happier. I don't feel that personally, but I've noticed it. Yeah, and everything else, it just seems like parts of the city are getting a little more easy to live in, kind of, and things are getting taken care of a little better. I don't know. It's just, or maybe I'm just getting older and realizing that I just like being alive in general. So I'm like, oh, Cleveland's okay.
Yeah. But as a result of being all this, will your lack of total angst confuse people?
There's angst in there, but it just comes out in the song rather than me day to day where it used to be. I was an angry guy for a while.
We're going to get to the music, but I want to do all the National Enquirer questions because, you know, I'll do this in the full announcer voice. Ready? Here we go, Dylan. We've all been through bad breakups.
Actually, this relationship is
back. I know that.
We're on the mend, my man.
Yeah, no,
all right.
No,
but she was just on tour all the time because she played in a band. Yeah, she plays in a band called Speedy Ortiz. We weren't fit to live together at that moment, I would say. But everything's okay now. Yeah, I was just talking to her.
And I would venture to say that you're responsible for her being happier because her new project is all happy, joyous, poppy music. It's completely different from Speedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can take responsibility for that. So now... Based on that, for your audience, are your songs still relevant?
Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily even a breakup record. It's just more a record about knowing what you personally want out of life, I guess, rather than kind of taking other people's suggestions or something. Just kind of making sure you're doing the right thing for you. Yeah.
So when you were starting all this, right, and you're making the tapes and you're doing, you know, and you're on MySpace and it's all very innocent and you go, I want to be a musician. This is so cool. This is so awesome. And then I'm catching you, what, halfway, well, three quarters of the way, actually probably 90% of the way through America before you go off to Europe,
yeah.
Right? So how have you managed to kind of reconcile what it takes, other than pouring it into the music, which is the obvious thing, but how have you been able to reconcile the fact that this is the other part of the career, that playing live is great, but being in the friggin' van, you know, day after day, is not, the I-5 is not a pretty place.
True. I don't know. The way to deal with it is just sort of, we don't go crazy on tour or anything. We're very relaxed people. Not necessarily, no. You know, here and there, but nothing too wild. Like, karaoke is about as crazy as we get. Yeah. Which I know, blowing your mind right now.
What's the karaoke song of the moment?
Oh, I just did. We just did it the other day with Itasca, who we're on tour with. And I sang with their pedal steel player, Champagne Supernova by Oasis. And it felt good. But yeah, no, it's easy. It's easy when you're on tour and dating someone else who is also on tour. And they like, they get it. Everyone gets it. Everyone's like chill. And they're like, okay, we'll see each other when we can. You know, it's relaxed that way.
Let's talk. This is one of my favorite topics: genres. How do you deal with it when everybody tries to pigeonhole what Cloud Nothings is?
Well, I think the way we like to deal with it is to kind of change everything up with every record, so people are just like, oh, well, now your band sounds different. Yeah, they have to kind of be forced to like re-reconcile, I guess, with every single record. And it's not like it's a drastically different sound, but it's different enough where they're like, oh, now it has like elements of this other thing. Yeah, and I like doing that. I like screwing with people who like to, especially people who like to, I guess, yeah, no, I don't, sure. Yeah, I just don't like, I don't like people who kind of pigeonhole anything or label anything at all in life, let's say. So I like to screw with them.
What did I read about a toaster being thrown?
This was at like the punk bar in Cleveland, and it was Christmas Day, like night, Christmas night. And I was playing like a noise show with this other band I'm in, and I would play saxophone in it. But in the band right before us was really wild sounding, just like crazy noisy, like psychedelic rock stuff. It didn't make any sense. But there was this girl there who just brought a toaster, and I saw her walk in with it, and I was like, that's not good. Like, something's going to happen with that toaster, and I don't want to see it. But then at some point, like, people are going wild that whole show, just throwing whatever. And then at some point I saw the toaster go and just like crack this guy in the face, and his nose was just bleeding all over the place. But he stuck around. Like, he didn't leave. He got hit with the toaster and stuck around. So props to that dude.
Producers are one of my favorite things, because I've been in that seat. And you've kind of taken the tour. You've had an Albini, which you know, when you have an Albini, the meter is just going to go right there, and it's going to stay loud, and it's going to be there. And that's what he does. But one of the things you talked about John, the latest producer, is that he was, quote, hands-on. It's very, very egalitarian of you to let a label recommend, but you obviously have trust in your labels. So you've got a high trust factor there. But tell me about that, and then tell me about what hands-on meant in John Goodmanson's case.
No, I mean, I trust our labels because they've been there since, like, day one with us, basically. Yeah, they know us, and they're very, like, independent-minded, I would say. Yeah, and Mark from Wichita suggested John Goodmanson. And, like, we kind of just go with whoever these labels pick, because a lot of music I listen to, the producers either don't exist because it's just, like, the band recording themselves in some crappy basement, or it's someone who probably wouldn't be a great fit for us. So, yeah, we recorded with Goodmanson. And the hands-on, I guess, it just sort of meant that he did a lot more fiddling around with the tracks once we recorded everything, just sort of, like, splicing and dicing things to make like the perfect take out of a bunch of different versions of a song, which I don't think we'd really done before. Everything else was like very literally like live. And this was the first record that had those sort of layers to it, I guess. And
was that something that you knew about, or was that something that you laid down tracks and then he calls you in and goes, hey, listen to this? And you go, whoa, I wouldn't have thought of that.
No, it wasn't like that. We have the songs like done. Like, that's all very finished and all our ideas. And I wanted piano on this record because there was piano on Attack on Memory, but none on our next record, Here and Nowhere Else. So I missed it. I like having a piano. And there was this beautiful piano at the studio, so I had to play it. But yeah, his input wasn't musical as much as it was just like
mixing.
Basically mixing. Yeah, he did a lot in mixing that we'd never really done before, even approached that level of kind of sonic goofing off. Yeah.
And you talk about tempo, which is really interesting. And said medium tempo, but then you blow it. Darkened Rings is just, you know, suddenly it's like dum ba dum ba dum ba dum ba dum. Well, Darkened Rings is the writing in the tempo because fast is angry and medium is happier.
I think these songs in particular, most of them to me at least, just seem to want that kind of space that a slower tempo gives them. So like doing fast stuff is great, and when we play live, like, they're fast. But for the recorded version of them, I think it kind of fit the songs a little nicer to be slowed down and just have that kind of breathing room and like listening room, especially in headphones. It's a nice like headphone listen.
Let's get geeky. Let's talk amplifiers. Bunch of different amps. So how did you pair amp and song?
Yeah, we just tried a bunch of stuff because that studio we were at was, it was called Sonic Ranch. Yeah, it was unreal.
Where is Sonic Ranch for the people
who don't know? Yeah, this place Sonic Ranch is in, or outside of El Paso, Texas, right on the border of Mexico. Huge pecan farm with some studios in it, like more than one studio. So we were in this like amazing room that was just full of like crazy, and it had a Billy Gibbons amp there where the only knob just said cerveza, which is like beer in Spanish, you know. And that amp ripped. That was such a sick amp. But yeah, every track we would just kind of like have maybe a basic idea of what we wanted, but just sort of fiddle around with mashing amps and guitars until it was like the right tone for that song.
So every band from Europe, particularly the UK, of course, wants to make it in America. When you head over there, how do you feel you're received versus being received here? Is there really a difference in your perception?
I feel like in the UK it feels similar, and not just because they are speaking English and I know what's going on, but in continental Europe, people do seem a little more like reserved, maybe. Here people just like flip out, like we'll play a show. Yeah, no, they just gotta stand there and watch you play. Yeah, and like don't really move, you know. A little bit, yeah, but you're just playing, so you're like, whatever. Yeah, I guess they might like it. Yeah, I don't know, maybe I'll come back. Yeah, but over, I mean, over here, people go crazy, usually pretty quickly into the show. People are just jumping off the stage and all that. And that happens in the UK and maybe like Spain and some of like the party feeling countries over there. But a lot of Europe is chill. I don't know that I feel more at home over there. It does feel, I don't know, I read a lot of things about guitar bands being gone, but like just touring and playing shows, like, I don't feel that way because people do come to our shows, and all the guitar bands that I like are doing okay for themselves, you know, and on a small scale, but they're still doing fine. It doesn't feel like it's dead, at least in like the sort of underground people who are excited about music kind of thing. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't notice too much of a difference in that respect. Yeah.
But you're not writing 3-minute pop songs. I think the shortest song on here is 3.5, but then you're into the 4 and 5 minute zone, right? You've got some pretty anthemic things going on. So, you know, do you think at all these days about radio play or any of that sort of thing when you write? Is it even relevant to you?
I don't really think about the radio. We got like a radio lady for the first time ever on this record. But yeah, I never really had that before. Just kind of wanted to see what it was like, you know, like what she would do. It's just an experiment, a radio experiment on this record. And yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what'll happen, because personally, I don't think I listen to the radio a whole lot. You know, I'm more of just like I go to record stores, really.
Strange Year. Tell me about that. That's quite the song. That's a, there's lots going on there. That's a heavy tune. That's like, you know, it's kind of like you're along and it's melodic and it's doing this. And then that track comes up and you're like, okay, I have to figure out where I need to be, what I need to do. Do I put on my headphones, which is probably, you know, again, very old school, but it really is a good, you know, headphone song.
That was the last song we made for this record, I think. Like, it was the only one we went to the studio, and I didn't have, like, lyrics yet. You know, I didn't have, pretty much, yeah. I was like, I don't know if this is good or not, but let's just record it and put it on the record, you know, just in case it's good. yeah, and it worked out. Yeah, I like that song a lot. But it's cool to have, I don't know. I just like that one kind of, it does just sort of ramp up until the end, and there's, like, a calm, creepy outro. So it was like an experiment in form. Yeah, all the songs on this record, I wanted to just make different styles and arrangements, I guess, than we had in any record in the past. Like, I almost had like a formula going with the record before this one. Right. So with this one, I wanted to break it a little bit, songwriting-wise.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then in between, I will play whatever you want me to play.